We got to get to football. It is Monday, so that means it's time for the Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam Hoge is standing by. We talk a little bit about expectations. If this was the year that you expected something from the Chicago Bears, you are a lot like me and other Bears fans, and you're wholly disappointed in what we saw last night and what we've seen this season, as the Chicago Bears now are pretty much eliminated from playoff contention. Now, that you know, there's math that goes this way and that way and under and over, and it'll tell you different things. But as a fan and everything in our heart, we know that this season has not lived up to the expectation. And it's obvious it will not in the final six games. This is like 1985 Cubs territory. Right? Or if you look up the Chicago Bears from 2007, after they lost the Super Bowl, there are a lot of expectations for the team with Rex Grossman at the helm. And the team went 7-9 that season. And that seems to be a little bit where we're going this year. Adam Hoge has written about Matt Nagy in his latest column, which is up at WGN Radio now. Of course, our Bears insider, one of the best Bears reporters in the business. You can find all of his stuff at WGNRadio.com/Bears, and he's with us now. Adam, great to talk to you, bud.
Good evening, Justin. Yeah, feels like sort of a broken record here with some of these weeks. But yeah.
At least we could say it's over.
Yeah, no question. It's definitely over. Because even if they win out at this point, which is obviously not going to happen the way they're playing, but even if they somehow did, I really don't think 10-6 gets you in the playoffs. Yeah. When you look at the Vikings already, it's, what are they, 8-3 now?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, because this has been something we've been struggling with here on the Monday Evening Quarterback. It's just about expectations. What to expect from the coach, from this organization, from Mitch Trubisky, from this defense. And as we are way past the halfway point of the season, it feels like in every single category, the expectation has faltered.
Yeah, and it's surprising. But look, and sort of the theme of what I wrote today on WGNRadio.com, these things just... they tend to snowball when you're underachieving, when you're having these bad NFL seasons. Everything gets magnified. Everything seems like it's the end of the world, and controversies are hard to avoid. And when you're the head coach and you have to talk to the media every single day, it just gets to the point where everything that comes out of your mouth kind of is not believable, and everyone has an objection with everything. That's just kind of how this works, and it's not really a defense. It's just how this goes here in the NFL. It's the reality of the job, and I think Matt Nagy's learning that the hard way right now. And the way the quarterback situation, the way the injury was handled last night, whether it was miscommunication just on the Bears sideline between Trubisky not wanting to reveal how bad it was to the trainers, to Dave Ragone, the quarterback's coach, to the head coach. There was obviously miscommunication there, but then it was also miscommunicated post-game and how it was, relayed to the media, because what we heard last night turned out to be a completely different story from what we heard today later in Lake Forest when Matt Nagy met with the media again this afternoon.
Yeah, this is a... unfortunately, like you said, a broken record. We've had questions about the communication at Hallis Hall, whether it be little things like checking with the special teams coach about which preferred hash
right.
Eddie Pinheiro wanted on the kick that we lost to the Chargers, or last night where it seemed like watching the game on the national broadcast, to the announcers, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, they assumed the Trubisky replacement was a benching, because they even said at some point that the Bears PR did not have the answer for them. And there seemed to be this miscommunication, because then when it came out after the game that there was a hip injury, it almost felt like nobody believed it. And there seemed to be a little bit of miscommunication between the coach, the media, Mitch Trubisky, everything. So, and it seems like it's all self-inflicted wounds at this point, because even if he was hurt, they made it seem like nobody had a clue.
Yeah, and I can't really disagree with that. That's how the information was put out there last night. It was not handled very well. Look, I can just tell you from being down on the sidelines during our Northwestern broadcast, I mean, there's typically a PR person for the team that you go to for injury updates. The Bears did tweet out on their account that it was a hip injury and he was questionable to return. Even there, with 2 minutes left in the game, you're saying that he's questionable to return. Like, even that is actually not even accurate. He was out for the game, and they screwed that part up too. But when number one priority should always be your broadcasters, because Twitter is one thing, but when you got a nationally televised game and it's not communicated. And I don't know. I'm not a part of the NBC broadcast, so I don't know if it was communicated or if it wasn't. But they have a sideline reporter. Michelle Tafoya is really good. You would have thought that if Mitch Trubisky, it was an injury, they would have done everything they could have to make sure that got put out on NBC. Now, I guess it's possible that that was communicated to NBC and they chose to ignore it because they didn't believe it. That's a possibility too. But the problem was is that to the country, it seemed like it was a benching, right? When you watched on TV.
No, Chris Collinsworth went and said, this really opens it up for the fans and for the media. And what does this mean for the next 6 weeks of Mitch Trubisky in Chicago? I mean, I did not know. I was watching the game. I was not on Twitter. I was not watching anywhere else. I thought it was a benching. I thought Matt Nagy, with 2 minutes to go in the game, said enough of Mitch Trubisky, which I thought was ridiculous. But the idea being that I had no idea of the injury. And that speaks volumes to the fact that there was one and the Bears did not communicate it. Or maybe NBC didn't pick it. I don't know. But whatever which way, it made everybody look embarrassed.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, the reason why I don't think it was a benching at all, some people still believe that. It doesn't make sense to bench
it.
No,
it doesn't.
You're still down 10. You technically still have a chance, as unlikely as it is. But putting in a cold Chase Daniel.
No, when we saw exactly what was going to happen when he came in. That's exactly what happens when a backup comes in with two left in the game, right?
There's no logic to benching him there. So I believe that there was an injury. But the problem then is, when did this injury happen? How did it occur? How was it communicated within the Bears sideline? The head coach last night acted like he didn't know about it. His play calling made it look like he didn't really know or didn't think it was that bad. And then and the messaging last night between what Trubisky said and what Nagy said was different. We can get into this as this hour goes along. But then this afternoon, Nagy comes out and confirms exactly when it happened, which was the last sack Trubisky took in the second quarter. Whereas last night, Nagy said he wasn't aware of it until one or two series before he actually benched Trubisky, which was at the end of the game. So that communication does not add up. There was a breakdown in communication within the Bears, and then there was a breakdown in communication in how the information was put out both during the game and after the game, and it led to this firestorm. And when you're losing and you're not putting your messaging out the right way, it just makes everything look a lot worse. And that is what we're seeing here in the last 24 hours.
Absolutely. Insult to injury. Adam Hogue is our guest. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you'd like to text or call, if you got questions for Adam, now's the time to do so. We'll take our first break here, come back. And yeah, let's talk about, your column at WGNRadio.com/Bears is brilliant, just in the way that you pick, you kind of go through all of the different miscommunication that they did last night, and we'll continue on that thread when we come back here on the Monday Evening Quarterback on WGN Radio. The Monday Evening Quarterback continues here on 720 WGN, and talking about last night's 17-7 loss to the Los Angeles Rams at the Coliseum in Los Angeles last night. Adam Hogue on the line. He is the man behind the Bears coverage here at WGN Radio. You can find all of his work at WGNRadio.com/Bears. All right, so let's get back to Matt Nagy, who last year, come December, January, was a toast of the town, could get a table anywhere. How the times have changed in the way that it seems like all Bears fans have given up on some of the suspect and questionable way that the game is being managed. Obviously, the quarterback controversy, but even down to now the miscommunication with the media. It just seems to me more and more fans are getting disgruntled with the body of work that is Matt Nagy.
Yeah, let's talk about the big picture here, just this season. I mean, first of all, last year, everything went right. It really did. You didn't have a lot of injuries. You got off to even though you blew that 20-0 lead in Green Bay, things looked promising in that game, and then you came back and you fired off three wins after that. So really, last year, your only drama was your kicker, right? Oh, by the way, the Bears still need a kicker. We can talk about that, too. But that was really your only drama last year. You didn't have injuries. People trusted you. Considering where the franchise had been for so many years, it was easy to just buy into what they were doing because they won 12 football games. And winning is ultimately what this is all about and what everyone's mood is based on, right?
Right.
But this year, I mean, we can go back to The not playing your starters in the preseason wasn't as big of a deal this year because it kind of worked last year, so sort of got the benefit of that of the doubt on that one. Then there was, but then there was the debacle in your opening game against the Packers, which looked bad. So just, you know, nothing specific, but just not a great. Your team didn't look ready, and then that opens up the door to the criticism of how you didn't play Trubisky, especially Trubisky in the preseason. You made it seem like he was ready to go, and clearly in week one he wasn't, and your offense wasn't. Yeah. But that was just 1 week. Now we can fast forward a couple weeks to some other controversies. Okay, they chose to go to London late in the week. You sort of want to give them the benefit of the doubt, but then when you come out flat in the first half against the Raiders, again, this is just, you can see how this was just starting to build. Okay, now you play the Saints after your bye week. You're completely flat, and you have a franchise low 7 rushing attempts. This is where things start to build, and the criticism really starts to build against Matt Nagy. And now, a week later, you lose on a field goal that you should have had at the end to the Chargers, a game you needed to win, and then this thing pops up about how, you didn't run the ball, you just knelt, you didn't try to pick up any yardage, and then it turns out you weren't even at the hash mark that the kicker wanted to be at. So now we got another controversy. Then we fast forward to this game last night against the Rams, and you have this whole thing with Mitch Trubisky's injury. So, as you can see from everything I just laid out, it has been a much different year for Matt Nagy. There's been a lot of questions, most of them all fair, and most importantly, the Bears keep losing.
Again, I go back to this word of expectations, because Matt Nagy himself was using words like, this is going to, you know, advance, this is going to be the advanced class. We're going to open up the playbook. This was all in the spring, you know, the preseason. This the last year was 101 to 202. Yeah. That everything you're going to see, this is Mitch Trubisky is going to understand this offense. Everyone's going to be much, much better. But when you look now into week whatever this is, with only 6 games left, the Bears are at the bottom of every offensive category. They're neck and neck with the Dolphins and the Redskins for the worst offense in football. This is not what was expected. This was not the expectation from Matt Nagy, who came in as an offensive genius, one of these whiz kids who was a quarterback whisperer and could move the ball and score points, and this is what we're going to see. We're seeing the exact opposite, and unfortunately, in Chicago, we've heard this before.
And this is why I don't want it to sound hypocritical that now I'm going back to the preseason and them not playing the starters, because I was fine with that at the time. But what I do now question is how they could have been so off base with their own evaluation of this team, right? Because all that talk that you just brought up between going to 101 to 202 and Trubisky making that next step and this offense, they clearly believed that that was all going to happen. Otherwise, they would have played those guys in the preseason. Mm-hmm. They would have said, yeah, there's a risk of injury, and we know that's the main reason for not playing those guys. But if they needed the development, if they really felt like they needed the reps, they would have played them. And so the fact that they didn't shows you that they truly believed this was all going to come together this year. And not only it hasn't even come close. I mean, this is
no, it hasn't.
They're up there in yards per play with the Jets and the Dolphins. That's how bad they've been offensively. They are one of the worst teams in the NFL offensively. And it's hard to understand how they could have been this off base in their own evaluation of their own talent.
There's something to be said. Okay, so we can break this down. And you do a great job of breaking down one specific play in your column, which is about a play where I think it was a third down late, where they were driving late in the second half or somewhere in the first quarter.
Third and one, 3:33 left in the third quarter.
There's, obviously, and this happens much too often when we watch Chicago Bears football, nobody's open and the blitz is in his face before he starts, Trubisky's face. So he scrambles out, he's moving around, he's looking for people. And as you point out, in many cases in the NFL, you know, when the quarterback scrambles, the receiver's job is to get open, to make something happen. And you point out that two of the receivers on the play just stopped. The other two were covered and they didn't really do anything. There didn't seem to be much, like I said, from the get-go, the play broke down because the rush just overloaded our offensive line, who can't seem to block anybody. And I'm not trying to be like a Cutler apologist like we're so used to in Chicago, but this is not just about Mitch Trubisky. There is something effectively wrong with this whole offensive picture that we have seen here in 2019.
Yeah, let me just clarify, because I thought you were actually going to be bringing up the option play.
No, everyone knows that was. We don't have to analyze that garbage play, but go ahead.
Right. So that play was in the third. What you're talking about is the last sack in the second quarter.
Yes.
So, and this was actually something I tweeted when it happened, because I could see it from the press box. So Trubisky takes a snap. Pressure's on him right away, and nobody's open. That has happened way too much this season. Okay, we can openly criticize the quarterback, rightfully so, but in his defense, there have been plenty of other times where he's had no shot to make a play. So here he makes a play with his athleticism to get out of this mess in the middle of the pocket. He escapes to the right, and he's trying to extend the play. He sees David Montgomery open in front of him. He's looking right at him, but this is a check down, and the corner's closing fast. This is third down, by the way. So he knows if he dumps it off to Montgomery, it's not going to be a first down. So he stalls, and he's like waiting for somebody to get open. And he's got four wide receivers, one of which is tight end Ben Broniker, but unfortunately, all three of his wideouts are on the opposite hat, past the opposite hash mark on the other side of the field, but he's stalling. He's giving them time to get open, and Anthony Miller and Taylor Gabriel don't move. They just stand there. Allen Robinson and Ben Broniker move horizontally closer to the sideline that Mitch is at, but neither of them come back to the ball or go deep, which is, in a scramble drill, what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And so no one does anything. Mitch has to eat the sack. He takes it. Now, you can maybe argue if he picks up 4 yards, they could possibly kick a field goal, and maybe so. But the bottom line is nobody helped him on this play. I tweeted it as it happened. It's unacceptable. It brings up questionable coaching. Then it turns out this is the play he got hurt on. This is the play that he took the shot to the hip, and he got hurt on this play on a sack he didn't need to take if somebody had just helped him out and gotten open. So this just kind of points to the catastrophic failure that's happened offensively here, and it's disappointing that it keeps happening every single week.
When you say coaching, and do you mean when you talk about the wide receivers coach or the offensive line coach or the offensive coordinator, all the sort of traditional coaching positions we know, have they been the same coaches from year to year? Are they the same? The same wide receivers coach that was coaching them up last year when we loved Taylor Gabriel and everything. What is happening here that there's a disconnect that these guys are going back to Pee Wee football and they don't understand how to play the game?
Well, first of all, I think there's obviously a frustration level that's trickling into these players' performance. I don't think last year at this point in week 11, two wide receivers would have just quit on a play like they did. So that's part of it, but it's still, I think, fair to bring up the coaching, because how does nobody on the field go down, go deep or come back to the ball like you're taught? And especially on third and long, you're probably taught to go deep more than come back to the ball. It's just, and then you can bring up Anthony Miller's poor route on the interception. You can bring up all the talking he's doing.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be much of a he's not showing a lot of improvement to year two, that's for sure.
But to answer your question, yes, these are the same offensive coaches. Now, the defensive staff turned over because Vic Fangio left.
Right, and we're going to talk about that in the second half here, for sure.
But these offensive coaches are the same ones that Matt Nagy hired last year. There's one holdover from the John Fox era, and that is Dave Ragone, the quarterback's coach.
Adam Hogue, Monday Evening Quarterback, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Text and call if you want to get in on the conversation. We'll continue it right after the break here, 720 WGN. All right, back here in the Monday Evening Quarterback, 312-981-7200. We're going over what we saw yesterday in the Bears' loss in L.A. to the Rams. Adam Hogue covers the Bears for WGN Radio, wgnradio.com/Bears. Before we move on to the defensive side of the ball, we should talk special teams. Eddie Pinheiro has turned out to be, a journeyman kicker that we picked up in the summertime. Exactly what we thought he was going to be. I'm confused why people are upset with Eddie Pinheiro when it didn't seem like the Bears really took the kicking situation seriously.
I'll push that.
I thought it was a circus. It was goofy this offseason, and they ended up with a kid that, I don't know, you get what you pay for, I guess.
See, I think they actually did try to look as many possible options that were out there. I think that's why they had so many kickers come in. Now, you could say, could they have gone out and paid more money for a veteran? That maybe that would have been more serious. Fine, except I would argue that that's what the Bears have tried to do for the last 4 years since they got rid of Robbie Gould, right. And that hadn't worked at all. So, and it didn't work with Cody Parkey. So I think that's why they tried to find a young leg, Eddie Pinheiro, who technically a rookie, but he was with the Raiders last year. He got hurt. He was winning that job at the time. Gets hurt, sat out the whole season. The Bears give up a 6th-round pick for him. And, you know, it was promising early. He's young. He's got a big leg. And early on in the season, he was making his kicks. He did win this team a game against the Broncos week two.
And a game that the Bears should have lost, by the way.
They should have lost. Yeah, right. He bailed them out. He bailed them out. Yeah. They played awful that day. And was maybe a sign of things to come so far this season. Unfortunately, as the weather has turned, the wind has played games with his head, I think, a little bit, and now he's lost confidence. So I was actually encouraged him going to L.A. last night, warmer weather. It was beautiful outside. I thought, okay, now he gets a chance to kick in warmer weather. He should be fine. But I think maybe his confidence is just in a place and not a good place. He's now missed 3 out of 7 kicks. Here's the question. Eddie Pinheiro, can he pull himself out of this? Because I do think he's young and has talent. Or, and we see this so many times with kickers, does it just become too much of a head game and he never digs out? That, unfortunately, I do think, though, that now that the season's over, the Bears should let him try to get out of this and not necessarily rush to find a replacement. Yeah, if they were in the middle of a playoff chase, I'd say this is a huge problem. Now it's like, all right, let's see if this guy can finish strong and continue to be your kicker next year.
Isn't it funny, too, because it was this time, obviously, we lost a playoff game at home because of kicking woes. We spent all the offseason saying this was the biggest problem we had. And we're determined to fix it. We're going to fix it by having the team all watch guys kick 42-yarders or 41-yarders, whatever it was, enough to where the national media was kind of scratching their head at what Matt Nagy was doing and maybe instead work on the offense instead of this. But here we are talking about missed field goals in week whatever, 11, 12. It just feels to me like a huge failure on the part of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace that they spent so much time focusing on this. And we have a kicker that I think is at the same point Cody Parkey was last year.
I think technically worse. I think his field goal percentage right now is worse than Cody Parkey's at this point last season. And this was after he had doinked off the
four times
against the Lions.
It was ridiculous. So okay, let me ask this though, because it seems to me Matt Nagy is another controversy in that I feel like he hasn't had a handle on this year, and that's the kicking situation. Because in the beginning of the year and what he did in the offseason I thought was questionable, and we were arguing about it here. But then you saw in the first game of the year when they were on the 35-yard line and he opted not to go for a field goal, instead for a 4th-and-4 against the Packers, something like that. Last night, misses the first one, decides to go 4th-and-9 instead of bringing him out for a 49-yarder. Then the next time down in the exact same space, kicks the field goal. I mean, if you're saying Eddie Pinheiro has head problems, who's causing those head problems? It sounds like it might be his head coach.
Yeah, well, I think a head coach kind of has head problems and knowing what to do with his kicker. I think he's kind of lost right now, and I think that the decision making there in the first quarter last night kind of proved that. I didn't like how he handled that last night. I mean, first of all, you got to kick the first field goal. It's 48 yards. It's 4th-and-7, so he misses it. And Now, I kind of understand at that point, because Pinheiro's been struggling, if you're going to be like, all right, I just don't trust him.
Right.
That's fine.
No kicker.
So then on the next one, it would have been a 49-yard field goal, so 1 yard deeper, and it's 4th-and-9, not necessarily a high percentage to convert, but you don't trust your kicker. Fine. The problem is then on your next opportunity, you are actually, let's see, where were they went?
Similar, 47,
29, so 2 yards closer, and it's 4th-and-6 instead of the 4th-and-9 you just went for. So you're a little bit closer. It's a little bit more makeable of a 4th-down conversion if you go for it, and now you're kicking it again. And I don't think you really helped your kicker's confidence by passing on the field goal the second time around. So you're sort of just going back and forth. The logic isn't really there. It seems like he's kind of guessing. And I agree with you. I don't like how he handled that in the first quarter.
Yeah, and it seems like, again, from the preseason to not talking to the special teams coach about taking a timeout or getting to the other hash in the game against the Chargers, it seems that Matt Nagy he's a young head coach, and obviously he's got a future and hopefully in Chicago, but it doesn't seem like it's his specialty to deal with a kicker.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get to earlier when we talked about the big picture here and the drama that Nagy's having to deal with this year, and there's just more of it, and there's more things he's struggling with. So I think that's the – you just brought it up in a perfect way, Justin. He is still a young, inexperienced head coach who's learning on the fly here, and this year a lot of things are going wrong when last year a lot of things went right. So – personally, I think it's way too big of an overreaction for all these people to be saying he should be fired. I first of all, it's not going to happen. I can tell you that. But even to think that it should, you have seen when this franchise has – you've seen a lot worse. And you could see what can go wrong if you hire the complete wrong guy. Now, maybe Matt Nagy will never turn this around. And after next year – look, the hot seat's going to be – Ryan Pace is already going to be in year six next year, and Nagy's going to be in year three, and if they struggle again, then this is a completely different conversation. But I do also think both of them have done enough good here that they deserve the benefit of the doubt to get 1 year to try to learn from their mistakes this year and dig this franchise out of it. But if it doesn't happen, then it's a different story a year from now.
I guess, Adam, the issue, and I'll speak from Bears fans, that we don't look competitive. We don't look like we're prepared for the week. We see a coach that constantly is being strategically outmaneuvered. We see a game that is lost from the get-go in the trenches. We don't see that Chicago Bears fighting spirit. Last year we saw it where you thought you were going to lose to a Vikings team, but you went in and punched them in the mouth. This time around, we're not seeing, except for maybe that game at Soldier Field against the Vikings, the Bears do that on either side of the ball. There's no sort of uplifted spirit that this team is going to come back from adversity, that they're going to be there in the end, that they will take, they know how to handle it. Everything about this year feels off from last year, and I think that's why Bears fans are saying, I don't think that they're just like knee-jerk, like, fire the guy, we lost the game. There's something wrong with the chemistry or the vibe of this team.
Well, I agree with most of what you just said, except for one thing. I do actually think that they've still been competitive. If you look at it, all the but one game against the Saints, and it was still actually a one-score game there for a long time.
They're very Lovie Smith competitive. And I like Lovie Smith, but the idea that you're down 6 points, but you're really down four scores. You're not going to get that 6 points.
That's fair. but what I'm saying is, just compare it to the end of the Phil Emery, Mark Trestman era. You could see all over that roster that it was depleted, that it had been destroyed, that way more damage had been done than any kind of good. And it was obvious that change needed to be made, both in terms of what was being built on the roster with the GM and how it was being executed on the field with the head coach, who looked clueless. Now, obviously Ryan Pace has made some mistakes here, the biggest of which appears to be the quarterback. But to me, there's still talent here on the roster, and there's still a good amount of youth. If the coach can figure out some of these issues that he's admittedly going through here, and they can rectify some of these personnel mistakes that they've made in the offseason, it would not surprise me if this team bounces back next year.
Right.
The difference at the end of the Phil Emery, Mark Trestman era was that that team had no chance. It had to be blown up. And unfortunately, though, it led to a long rebuilding process. Now that rebuilding process, which looked successful a year ago, needs to be saved. I still think it's these guys that should be doing it, but I certainly understand why fans are frustrated because they are underachieving. There's no question about that.
And Pete and I were talking about this in the office right before we came in, that if you see this squad at 4-6 and you're out of it, you're like, well, you know what? I mean, if they do, they don't turn it around and maybe Mitch is out and Chase Daniels in, okay, that's great. Well, we'll be playing for a top five pick. But we're not because they gave away that first round pick. So Ryan Pace has already said to the Bears fandom, we're not going to be one of the worst teams in the league. We're going to be one of the best. So we're going to give away our first round pick to prove it. And we're not. And that's the thing. It's like you're taking judgment from this one guy. And I think that's where fans go, I'm a little bit perturbed at the idea that so much has been given up for us to make a playoff run, and we're nowhere near close to being in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I understand the anger and the frustration. And I said this when they made the Khalil Mack trade last year. I remember specifically saying it the day the trade was made. They were doubling down on Mitch Trubisky that day. It was already an immense amount of pressure that the quarterback better work out when you traded those draft picks to go up and get him. But when you then traded more draft picks, first round picks, to go get Khalil Mack, which no one's questioning that move in terms of going and get that kind of talent. But what you did was you said this quarterback is definitely going to work out, because if he doesn't, you are screwed, because you don't have the first round picks to go get another quarterback. And unfortunately, that's where the Bears are right now. They doubled down on Mitch. He's not looking that good. And you're going into an offseason here where you have 2 second-round picks, but you're going to be fortunate if you get one in the fourth round here and a compensatory pick. It'll be towards the end of the fourth round. They do not have the draft capital. They do,
because they're not supposed to be here. They're supposed to be 10-6. They're supposed to be 11. They're supposed to be fighting for the Raiders are the ones you're supposed to have egg on their face. And instead, they're going to get a top 5 pick.
You know what? Right now, look, last year it looked like the Bears easily won this trade.
Yeah.
This year, it is 100% in the Raiders' favor. They have a better record than the Bears. They beat the Bears head-to-head, and they're going to have Bears pick spot. Once again. Yeah. So I always say
the Vegas Raiders are going to be hot next year.
You got to give trades 3 years to see who really won it. So I'm going to wait and see how this looks like after next year. But yeah, it's kind of best out of three right now. Bears got it last year. Raiders got it this year. Yeah, we'll see who wins it next year.
Okay, so I'm going to take a break here, and then we'll come back and talk about the defense, because I think a lot of Bears fans are also questioning what happened to the tenacity of this defense. There were some plays yesterday where late in the game, Goff was just standing back there for 10, 15 seconds. There was no pass rush. It can't just be that a defensive tackle, Pro Bowler, by the way, Hakeem Hicks, but is out for the year. I mean, there has to be more that's happening with this defense as they are losing their edge each and every week, even though they only gave up 17 points to this Rams team. Well, we'll talk about the defense coming up next here on the Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam Hogue is with us. Stay tuned. It is the Monday Evening Quarterback here on 720 WGN. Adam Hogue's with us, of course, covers Bears. WGNradio.com/Bears for his latest. We're talking about the loss yesterday to the Rams and what to expect for the next couple weeks. Let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. Like I said, and they only give up 17 to the high-flying Los Angeles Rams, who were at home, and kept the Bears in the game, and they've been doing this all season long. Is it just... We're just not seeing that harassment, the harassment that they're so used to doing. But is it just a byproduct that the offense is so bad that the defense doesn't look as dominating?
Yeah, I think that has a huge part. You know, it has a lot to do with it. It just does. But at the same time, I mean, there's some validity. They started this game, the defense did, by forcing 2 takeaways on the first
right.
2 possessions. So I thought Roquan Smith was flying around yesterday. I thought Eddie Jackson looked a lot better. But, you know, when you're just on the fields, and they actually weren't on the field a ton in this game. The Bears did win the time of possession. They ran, I believe, 74 plays, which is just an insane amount of plays for the amount of yards per play that they averaged. It doesn't make sense. Some of these numbers, what they're doing offensively,
it's abysmal. You can say it.
It really is. But it also defies logic how you could have that many plays and not score points.
It's crazy.
It honestly doesn't.
And they looked better
sense.
Yesterday. Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. But look, there were a ton of missed opportunities in this game. This was actually something I wanted to get to throughout the game on both the offense and the defense. Just look at the beginning of this game. So you have the 2 missed field goals. That's obviously 6 points. But you have the Gurley fumble to start the game. You don't get any points off of that. Roquan Smith gets an interception, which he hadn't had since they played the Rams last year. You get no points off of that. The Rams were offsides on a punt. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Extending that drive. That's basically a turnover. You get no points off of that. And then, later in the game, there was a defensive holding call on a sack on third down that extended the drive in the fourth quarter. These were massive mistakes by the Rams.
The Rams played a really sloppy game yesterday.
They wouldn't have beaten most teams in the NFL yesterday, but they managed to beat the Bears because the Bears didn't take advantage of any of that. They got 0 points off of all those things I just listed. Now, you asked me about the defense.
Yeah.
Missed opportunities on defense. Kyle Fuller. Dropped an interception.
A pick six, man.
It might have been. He may have been tackled, but at a minimum, he gets in the Rams' range.
When they showed the replay on the TV, you know, because it's so bang bang when it happens, you're like, oh, nice play by Fuller. And then they show the replay, and you're like, not a nice play. He had that ball in his hands. It hit him in the middle of his 2 hands.
Yeah.
He had this problem at the beginning of his career. We couldn't catch anything. We thought that was over, but. Oh man, that was bad news.
No, he's had some drop problems, and that was a huge missed opportunity in this game. You also had the great forced fumble buster screen.
Yep.
Forced on Cooper Kupp. Not necessarily anyone making a mistake there. The ball just didn't really bounce the Bears' way. There was nobody there to jump on it. That would have put the offense in the red zone, though, with the ball right there in a 10-7 game. So that was a missed opportunity. And then you also had the Rams had that deep touchdown to Reynolds.
Back, yeah.
And it got called back for an illegal formation. And that ended up being the same drive that the Rams scored on. The defense couldn't get off the field after a gift from the Rams. And by the way, you called the Rams a high-flying offense. They came traditionally, they've been under Sean McVay.
Yeah,
but
not this year, huh?
They came into this game, their last 21 drives, they had 0 touchdowns and 6 turnovers.
Wow.
So it's something's still not great there. That the Bears gave up 2 touchdowns.
But this is what they talked about last night. I agree with them. That Sean McVay recognized early that Goff was going to have the same kind of game he's had in the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
And he changed, maybe it was the game plan all along, but he changed to Todd a heavy dose of doubling the defensive tackles and Todd Gurley. And it seemed to work. Even though that's not McVay's style, just like we've had this conversation about Matt Nagy, who can't get the running game going, but he refuses to go to that I formation, which we did not see at all yesterday. This idea that the coach at least recognized that his offense that he wanted to play in that game or the style he likes to play wasn't working and went to something different, and it worked. And I just wonder if that's, you know, you look on the other side of the sideline, and you see the Rams being very similar to the Bears in the way that they're constructed, and you see a coach who may be adjusting quicker than ours.
Yeah, look, the Rams only averaged 3.2 yards per carry in this game yesterday, which is a good number for the Bears' defense. But the difference is, and you just said it, Sean McVay committed to the run, and it paid off in the end. Look, he's been under fire. I was actually reading the Los Angeles Times this morning when I was in the airport. He was getting just the praise this morning was just that, and it seems so simple, but give Todd Gurley the football. Todd Gurley has not been getting the ball, and he said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. 25 carries. We'll see what he gets.
Yeah.
It was only 97 yards on 25 carries, which is just a hair under 4 yards per carry, but it was good enough in this game for the Rams to wear the Bears down. I think that's a big reason why they were able to put together that late touchdown drive. Eventually, when you commit to the run, it pays off. And Sean McVay was under a ton of criticism last week when Gurley didn't touch the ball in the fourth quarter against the Steelers.
Yeah.
So it's not unlike what happened against the Saints earlier in the season for the Bears. They came back. Nagy was under criticism. He came back against the Chargers, and he just said, look, I'm going to run the ball. And they had success. Now, they still blew the game for other reasons, but this is why, you know, the Rams were able to eke it out yesterday, and they got to ride Gurley a little bit more.
Okay, so I charted, because I knew we were going to be talking. This is really just following your lead. You've inspired me. I charted every play last night in the fourth quarter. Like I just went through each one to see what it was like. And because I know that the Bears defense is the worst fourth quarter defense in football. And they always break down and you wonder why. And we saw they gave up a touchdown and essentially iced the game for the Rams. But what the story that's not told is that the Bears offense went 3 and out, and then you would say 3 and out, they got bailed out like you said on that defensive holding on that sack, which just led to another
3 and out.
But the idea that they when the Bears were making plays to get off the field, the Bears' offense just gave the ball right back to the Rams. And that has to have an impact. I know we always talk about wear and tear and wearing down a defense, but I don't know what else to expect from a team when you get nothing from the offensive side of the ball. Not a thing. I mean, they even with the defensive holding, they maybe got 6 yards, 7 yards in the fourth quarter. And that's ridiculous.
You know, to be honest, when the Bears were kept punting, I was sitting there going, maybe this isn't a bad thing, because it just felt like Jared Goff was going to throw them the ball.
That was the problem. They were jumping for it at the end there, yeah.
It just seemed like the offense was doing nothing, that the only way the Bears were going to win is if the defense created a takeaway. Now, to Goff's credit, and I think this is also a byproduct of committing to the run and sticking to it, and the Bears probably thought that the Rams were going to keep running the football there in the fourth quarter. Goff made some big-time throws. He didn't look great for 3 quarters, and he came up big in the fourth quarter, especially on that drive to seal the game for the Rams. So, you know, again, better coaching by the Rams than the Bears in that situation. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I just don't know what you can do. I've been struggling with it all year. I hate criticizing this Bears defense because for the most part, I agree with Matt Nagy that his defense is playing well. Yes, they could do a couple things better here and there. They haven't been outstanding in the fourth quarter. They've been good enough, though. This team should not be 4-6. If you had any kind of offense, even middle-of-the-road offense, this team would be in the playoff hunt.
Yeah. All right, so now what? Does Mitch Trubisky play next week? Are they saying this is day-to-day? What's the deal? I mean, what can we expect from the Giants coming to Soldier Field next week?
Well, I think we'll just have to track the practicing this week. You know, it's a hip pointer. It's like having a bruised hip. It doesn't sound like it's that big of a deal, but if he's, you know, if he's banged up and he can't move, he can't step into his throws, then, you know, maybe he doesn't play. But, look, the season's over either way. But you know what? Here's the problem, though. The season's not over. Well, the season's over, but Trubisky's evaluation's not over. They still need to see this guy play more.
Yep.
If his season's over now, and I don't think it is, but if it were to end right now, you have to go out and sign somebody to at least bring in competition. You have to draft somebody. You have to do something. You still have six games here. You need to see him continue to throw as many passes as possible. And to be honest, I didn't think he played that bad last night.
No,
I thought he was fine for the most part, and his struggles in the second half. Now he can blame him on the injury. I thought he was on his way to stacking two good performances together. He still, you know, can be a ton better, but they need this guy out there.
Adam Hogue is the man who covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find all his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. Also here on Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam, great to talk to you. A pleasure as always.
All right. Thanks, Justin.